Tonight's story is somewhat unique and calls for a different kind of introduction.
Who's gone off? Today we are canceling the apocalypse!
Wait a minute. You ain't heard nothing yet.
And this is?
Lilu Dallas Multipass.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
Houston, we have a problem.
Have you tried turning it off and on again?
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Now, where was I?
Welcome to another episode of Blokebusters. Yes, it's been a while. thank you very much for sticking around. I do apologize that it has been a while. There's been several things going on with a newborn in the house and several sort of life changes that have made scheduling things absolute hell, but we're out the other side of that now. And to start off, I am bringing on someone who is not a traditional guest on this. We're not going to be talking about a film this time, although I do feel like it would be great to have him on to talk about that. This is Brandon Starocki, and he is here to talk about Avalon, which is a comic that I think you guys will really like. He is the creator and writer, and according to his bio on the website, an ordinary guy. So, how are you doing, ordinary guy, Brandon?
Good. How are you doing today?
I am doing quite well. It is very good to be back in the saddle, as it were, after a little while away.
Of course.
So to start with, why don't we have you just give the 30-second breakdown of what is the Avalon comic?
Yeah, Avalon comic is a post-apocalyptic zombie story that is centered around the Castle family. Zombies in the story are a little bit focused on, you know, more so secondary in this story. We're really focused on the whole family as a whole and their dysfunctionality that's happened in the past. We're also focused on mental health and real life physical issues that go on an average person's day-to-day living. It's really just kind of that stuff's going to be intertwined with the whole story moving forward as well. And that's really the whole center focus of what Avalon is about.
Yeah, I'll say I have read first five issues, and it is definitely an interesting take on, you know, the apocalypse is happening and the zombies are there, although I don't believe I've seen that word used at all, which is another nice difference there from your average zombie apocalypse thing. But yeah, it's very much a focus on the people and what's going on there rather than, you know, exactly what's happening in the world. So yeah, definitely worth your time if you enjoy that sort of stuff, and also, you know, can be a little on the graphic side, which I also enjoy. So
definitely a take here in Avalon as well. As again, like it's really, you know, kind of focusing more so on, again, just the mental weight and all that stuff as well. You know, obviously with the zombie flick, you're kind of toying around with the graphic side, like you mentioned as well. So there's a lot of chaos going on, especially in the beginning of the story that we're starting to tell as well. But, you know, there's a lot going on in these first six issues here, or five that are out right now and six that we're pushing here as well. There's a lot of chaos and a lot of, you know, cool stuff to kind of read up on.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we sort of dive into some of the questions that I had based on reading the comics, I do want to say I have been to the website and looked around that. I've looked on the YouTube channel and watched the two videos there, and it really did feel like you're sort of leaning into the sort of schlocky B-movie style videos when you were making those, and it just was kind of perfect.
Sure, yeah. You know, it's kind of working with what you got, you know, and that's always the fun part of everything, and that's why, you know, even kind of looking at like those little kind of clips that we have made out there for everybody, you know, and even the idea of making short films or even little kind of mess around films as well, is, you know, it brings that authenticity out in the genre and the horror genre especially, you know, and kind of just having fun with it and really putting things out there, you know, touching on little things that kind of hit, you know, the center focus of the whole genre, and then just, again, having fun with it, you know. But using what you got, you know, we don't have a crazy budget here to kind of do anything crazy with it, but, it, you know, again, just trying to find ways to enjoy it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It really does feel like, not to say that it's, you know, you definitely didn't even have the budget of, say, Evil Dead, but it definitely felt like that, like, okay, we've got a camera, we've got some people, we've got this location, let's just go for it.
Yeah, 100%. You know, it's awesome that you kind of notice it in that way as well. And, you know, obviously, again, like, just seeing it, I mean, on a smaller scale of even Evil Dead, you know, you know, it's great to even have that even be noticed in a similar category, but like just the idea of it, the feeling of it, and just like the atmosphere of what we're trying to do here, again, just because it's like, it, not like we have millions or thousands of dollars to kind of really put into this in that kind of spectrum, but yeah.
Yeah. So the first thing that I actually wrote down, and, you know, this isn't going to be a surprise because it is a, you know, a comic, and it's the visuals that first started to strike me with it. So the art style really reminded me of the, like, the 2000 AD and the Sin City comics, and, you know, obviously because it's mostly black and white, and red is the only real color that you get, with the exception of the last page. So do you know if Demetrius maybe drew some inspiration from that?
I know he has some sort of, you know, connection and, you know, kind of direction and love for Todd McFarlane's old style, and really just adding a modern twist to it as well. You know, Todd yeah. McFarlane's kind of, what is it, 90s Spawn kind of era. And obviously, I'm not so much sure if, you know, if Sin City has a big inspiration on, you know, to him mentally, but I could definitely see the relation, the correlation as well to the style. You know, it adds such a unique touch, especially to the genre, and, you know, really just in today's day and age kind of comic, you know, sell point at this point as well. You know, although, you know, it mimics some sort of styles, but it still has its originality to it. Demetrius definitely brings a nice original touch to, you know, the artwork that Avalon kind of portrays as well. And it's such a unique kind of feeling to me, I guess, you know, when we talk about it a little bit more as well. But it brings so much to authenticity to Avalon and separates us from other things that along, you know, this genre as well.
Yeah, it's a really nice art style, and it's this is going to sound like I'm bagging on it a little bit, but like, it's not as polished as a lot of the art styles that are out there, which I think, especially for the type of story that's being told, really work. Yeah, part of the reason why I mentioned Sin City is a lot of the sort of silhouettes and the character faces and stuff, that it's sort of feels a bit like that, as well as the fact that red is, you know, the only real color you see in the black and white side. Like, you know, Sin City uses color very, very sparingly, and for very specific reasons, and obviously the blood is the only thing color that you really see in Avalon, with, again, the exception of that final page. And then, you know, just the entire art style, I think, has that gritty realness that something like this story needs, just to really ground it into what's going on, and also to really bring home just how graphic some of the things that are happening are, because, like, it for want of a better word, grotesque at times. And I think that really works.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I would agree with you on a lot of levels there as well. You know, having Demetrius being a part of Avalon, and, you know, really our first kind of comic kind of moving forward on both of our categories, I look at it in a sense where we're kind of spoiled with Demetrius. You know, the style that he brings is, it feels like it's me. It feels like that's exactly what we were looking for from the get-go. And it just kind of fell into our lap, and, you know, kind of searching and doing all the, you know, the research that we were looking for as well. And kind of like, again, like how Demetrius kind of just was there. And again, we're very blessed and lucky to have him be a part of this team, because, again, the style that he brings the grotesque style that you're talking about, the gritty style as well. It just fits this world in so many ways, and he just makes this world, he puts Avalon at a different level that I would say wouldn't be a thing if he wasn't a part of this team.
No, it's definitely a great choice and a really cool style for the story. And speaking of the story, actually, not an intended segue, but hell, I'll take it. what was your initial inspiration for the comic? Like, did you start with the idea of an outbreak and then sort of build the story around that? Did you start with the idea of the dysfunctional family and then sort of decide to put it in this post-apocalyptic at this point world? Like, what was the genesis?
I think it started with just the original idea of just loving the zombie genre in itself. And then it came down to the question that I bring up all the time is, how would I survive in a zombie apocalypse? and that kind of, unfolded in the sense of me thinking about me personally and my family at the time. When I was younger as well, because this story, this idea came out when I was about 10 years ago when I was a senior in high school. Not knowing exactly what to do, I had nothing really going on except for my, my household family. I had two brothers and, a mom and a dad as well. But it's really asking that question and generating that question towards, like, if something were to happen and break out right now, what would kind of come out? How would this kind of play? But I feel like it was parallel with each other. I love the genre and kind of just asking that question to myself. And really, so it kind of uplifted themselves, together as one.
Well, I think most people, if they're 100% honest with themselves, have at some point asked themselves the question, how would I do in a zombie apocalypse? And I can tell you that depending on where I am when it starts, I would either hole myself up with my family in the house and just not make a peep and just ride it out, or I would just fail miserably straight away. Like, I'm not someone that has a lot of survival skills.
and that's actually the best part too. And that actually just goes towards what we're kind of telling even in Avalon is there's some characters that actually seem like they have sort of those skills and meet their fate. There's actually other characters that also seem like they have those skills and, that are kind of pulling through and trying to figure things out. And there's other characters who just simply don't have those skills and they have to kind of live life, normal life, in a struggle and it's hard enough for them. And then you kind of throw an apocalypse at them. So it adds another level to it as well. Another 10 levels, I would argue. But like you said as well, depending on where you're at when this kind of starts, a little bit about Avalon too is just like, one of the oldest brothers is outside of the family. He's at a different area. So this apocalypse is all really starting when the family's already not together. So 99% of the time, that's probably going to be how an apocalypse kind of even starts anyways, is everybody's not together. So you have to kind of find your journey and go through this kind of hell to come together and figure things out and kind of take it from there.
Yeah. Another fun thing as well is that, obviously it depends on exactly what you're going to do with the story. I don't know past the 5 issues that I've read, but at no point really do we get a sense of what is happening outside of the main characters that we've seen, because they don't know. Mm-hmm. So we don't know. The only thing they know is that some people aren't picking up the phone, and that's about it.
100%, and that's always been kind of a question or things brought up in past kind of conversations as well, is like, what kind of happens with the apocalypse and these zombies per se, but that's I don't give too much away with it as well, because that's part of the storyline coming forward as well. Like you just mentioned yourself, a lot of this, really the key of the story is you're going to learn, you're going to know as much as the family knows. You're not going to know any more for that matter. You're going to kind of learn as the family learns what is going on, what is the issue here, why is this going on. All these things are going to start unfolding with issues to come as well, as the family kind of picks up on these little nuances and these little things kind of moving forward as well.
I don't want to go too much more into the story itself, because I think people should go and get this comic and read it for themselves. So I won't ask too much about the story. I will ask something that I always wonder about whenever I see any of these comics that are coming out. Like, how long does it actually take you to write an issue of the comic?
So it really depends. You know, since, you know, when we started this whole thing in the beginning, it took us a couple years. Alan and I, when we were kind of first kind of messing around with the idea of Avalon before it was really titled Avalon, and, you know, all like the deep, you know, depths of Avalon as well. It took us a couple years to figure out the why, what's going on, and so on, and what comes after as well. Because, you know, because when I originally thought of this idea in high school, I had a general understanding of what I kind of wanted this family to kind of go through and who this family was, but we had to elaborate it on it a little bit more. So we were trying to figure out all these things. So once we figured out everything we needed to figure out, the world, the depth, the characters, the realism, the infection, you know, we wanted to know that before we continued it. It started to kind of just steamroll from there. Before, I think we released this in 2022. We started working on this in 2018, 2019-ish kind of time frame. So it took us a few years to kind of perfect it in the way that we wanted it to be perfect. And then kind of just take it from there. You know, it like I kind of mentioned already, you know, issues kind of just like steamrolled from there. As we kind of write it, it kind of just falls into place. And with season two right now, we're kind of we had a general scope of what season two is, but now that another writer, Bill Dalton, is helping me right now, you know, as we're kind of getting into the nitty gritty of everything, it's again just steamrolling from there. As soon as we kind of get the ball rolling, it just kind of keeps going from there.
All right. Yeah, it's always something that has fascinated me with that stuff, because I am one of those people that I typically don't have too many ideas that are like, this is the idea and I'm going to build on that. I'm definitely more of a person who, if you give me something, I can take that and run with it.
Mm-hmm.
So like, it always fascinates me to talk to creative people like yourself who are the people that do create this stuff. It's something that I imagine that, you know, some issues maybe you're able to write them really quick, and then some of them you might agonize over and draft after draft after draft, and it's just it's always interests me to hear the creative process behind that stuff.
Yeah, I think that last little bit that you were talking about as well, that is definitely a process that I've went through personally. I can't speak for anybody else as well, but I'm assuming this similar kind of process where it's just like you kind of sit there, some issues kind of just fly by. And like you just literally word for word for what you just said, in some issues you kind of sit there and you're like, why isn't this kind of doing what I thought it was? Like, it has the ideas, but why isn't it coming together like I thought it would? But then again, like, as time goes by, I learned that it kind of just unfolds as time goes by, you know, and you start to figure things out as you kind of talk about it. Because at this point, I'm pretty comfortable with who these characters are that we have currently. Obviously, there will be more characters to come, but these characters that we have that are shown right now, I'm pretty comfortable with who they are, what they're doing, what their motive is, and it's really just letting the world kind of dictate what happens to it. And I've said in interviews in the past where we try to stay away from actually dictating the fate of the characters, and really letting the world and all that kind of stuff dictate it for us, you know. And it's kind of hard to explain, like, the process, I guess, and that. But it's just really, so what I mean, I guess, kind of, is like, we're not going to be like, okay, so-and-so dies this season, or so-and-so does this, you know, this is going to be a good plot for the story. When it feels right that a character should kind of go out, and it feels like the world kind of dictated that, that's when we're going to kind of just move it. Even if we believe, okay, this character seems like it could have, you know, they could have had a bigger arc or whatever it is, if the story's kind of dictating it, and it feels like that's when it needs to happen, that's when it needs to happen. And that's kind of like the approach that we're taking on this as well, is because you can't really predict what happens in the world on a day-to-day basis. So I like to kind of keep that same energy and just kind of work with what you got.
Yeah, I will say, just listening to you kind of talking about it that way, it feels a little bit to me almost like you could – be running your own, say, tabletop role-playing game of this world, and then, like, that's kind of how it dictating what's happening to the characters, because, you know, one bad roll, and this character that could have gone the distance just... unfortunately, the bad luck hit them.
Right, you know, I think you just hit it right on the head there, too, and I think that's just the perfect way of explaining it, too. It's just like you said, one bad roll and it's over. And again, no fault to nobody. It just seems like if the world ends up kind of dictating that, again, like, you can't predict how the kind of world, what happens and who, you know, it, sometimes fate is fate, you know. And so we kind of keep that energy in the writing room.
Yeah, and that's cool. And myself being a tabletop role-playing fan, I do feel like maybe you could, and this would require a lot of work, but, you know, you could consider maybe creating like a basic tabletop role-playing game within this world as well, like something where it is quite dark and, not every character is going to make it. It's not D&D. This is actually a very gritty, realistic thing, but I think that would be an interesting tie-in. But again, this is something that would be a lot down the line, I think.
Oh, 100%. I completely agree with you there as well. It does, and again, it's not D&D in that sense, and like you said, it does bring that gritty kind of realism and that raw feeling to it as well. And I personally enjoy it. You know, I would hope other people do as well, and I feel like the people who do enjoy that would obviously, you know, hit, you know, this comic would be, you know, for them, you know, and, you know, and like you said, even the board game kind of fashion of it as well, I think it can also hold that same weight.
Yeah, absolutely. Just switch gears a little bit here. I did also see on the website that you guys tend to go to a fair number of Comic-Cons and things like that. In fact, you're even going to be at one about 2 hours from me next month. How long have you been attending Comic-Cons and things like that? And not necessarily specifically with Avalon, but just in general.
Really, since we released Avalon, I never really went to cons before, you know, as fans. I never was like kind of, you know, and actually, you know, the weird part of it all is like I never was really into comics. You know, I always liked your standard comics. You know, I got The Walking Dead, you know, back then. I read mm-hmm. your Batmans and things along that nature as well. But I wasn't like your typical comic person until I really started writing the comics with Avalon here. And then once I started kind of doing that and falling into this category as well is when I really started to pick up the love and desire for reading comics and the world that comes with the comics, you know, the Comic-Cons and et cetera. But we, the year before we released is when we kind of went to our, Alan and I went to our first Comic-Con each to kind of see what, you know, the nature was and figure out what's going on. And then that following year is when we kind of attended the con as, in the Artist Alley and with having our own booth. And every year after that as well is when we kind of slowly expanded our radius as well, kind of going to different places and different unique places that we haven't been there with Avalon or myself as well. You know, so it's kind of been a cool, interesting experience since Avalon and kind of getting to know different people in this kind of world that I never thought I would meet in a million years, you know, because I never, not that I didn't know existed, but I never like just put time into it or effort into it until now. And it's been such an amazing, great experience for me personally. It just, you know, it's awesome to kind of see different, you know, worlds, different kind of ideas, all these different things and talking to different people as well. It's been an awesome, unique experience for me.
Yeah, no, I can only imagine. I frustratingly have not been able to get to a Comic-Con. It's something that I wouldn't mind doing, but just, yeah, the stars have never aligned for that. However, I do know that Comic-Cons can be fun but also weird thing to be at. So with that being said, what has been the strangest interaction you've had at a Comic-Con?
I wish I had something for you. I really haven't had anything off the walls for me personally. I know they can get a little dicey at sometimes as well, you know, but for me personally, all the events that I've been to, and all the people that I've had interactions with as well, have all been kind of great. you get to chat with people. They ask about your stuff. Then you hear about, you know, their backstory. You hear about that they're trying to do their own project, which is awesome. So I always try to influence people just to do it, because I was nothing. You know, I had no idea what I was doing beforehand. I had no understanding of it. I just kind of learned it as I kind of went along here and just formulated a team and figured out, you know, all these kind of things to, you know, these little things you have to pick up on as you're doing it, trial and error. And I've kind of always kind of convinced people who are kind of thinking about it just to do it. You know, so I've never really had an odd experience, at least that's coming to mind right now. But like you said, like I know that that's definitely a deal. But personally, I have no experience that's coming to mind right now. I just have great conversations, you know, and kind of meeting new people and different unique people that kind of just having fun with the world, you know, just trying to get away from the normal world and trying to just have fun with the event.
Yeah, that sounds like you've kind of got the best of it so far.
Yeah,
then.
Yeah.
yeah, and maybe once you get to the point where the comic is really taking off, then you'll start to get some of
the
interesting interactions. that's really cool. I love hearing about all those things. For instance, just as a random aside, so my mother is, I think you could classify her as a bit of a geek, and has been to several conventions in her time. And there was one time where she managed to convince my father to join her at one of these. I believe it was a Star Trek convention. And they got into the lift or elevator for people in the US. They went down one floor, and then five Klingons got on, and then they went down the rest of the way. And according to my mum, that was the moment she knew that my dad did not want to be there anymore. So something that I definitely want to see at some point.
Yeah, right. You know, I think hopefully, you know, you kind of get that kind of experience as well. You're open to anything's possible at these events, you know, and to go to one of them is, you know, you don't expect anything specific, you know, because you'll get the opposite, you know, but yeah.
Yeah, and of course the big thing online that you see all the time is all the people in cosplay doing all of these elaborate stuff, and it's like, those are the really big Comic-Cons.
Oh, yeah, of course.
A few hundred to attend, but it's always fascinating. I always look at what's coming near me, but it's always on a weekend when there's something going on.
Of course, there always is, 100%. I get that 100%.
Yeah, I mean, I have a daughter who does cheer. Like, it's just, there's always something.
Yeah, it's always going to seem that way, too. It's never going to be like, oh, I finally have something here. And I was actually talking to my wife, too. I was like, I feel like these events, even when I was working at my other job a couple of years ago as well, is they always fall on a weekend where I'm not getting paid. It just finds a way to find a weekend that I'm not getting paid on. So I can't, like, you know, enjoy and be like, oh, hey, I'll buy your stuff, you know, because I like the art you're doing or whatever, and kind of go to other vendors as well. It just somehow it always finds that way, and it drives me nuts. But I feel like there's never a perfect time.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I was saying, I know at some point I'll go. It's just probably going to be something where, like, maybe when my daughter is old enough and she's a little bit interested, I'll finally get my chance.
Yeah.
All right. So I only had a couple of other questions at the end here, one of which I'm just interested to hear, like, based on, you obviously talk about how much you like this genre, but I'm just intrigued to see what your response is to this one. So, in order, and I know I'm springing this on you, so I'll give you a minute, what are your favorite film, TV show, book and comic, and you're not allowed to say Avalon for the last one.
Is this in the genre, I'm assuming?
Well, I just in general, because obviously I know that you're a big fan of this genre, but that doesn't mean that, you know, your favorite film, TV show, book and comics are going to all be horror. I'm just intrigued to see, like, you know, after everything we talked about, what actually are your favorite things to watch and to enjoy?
Sure. I'll start backwards, I guess, and it's going to be a bit of a cop-out. It sounds like it, but it's true. Both Walking Dead show and comic series, it seems to, and again, for different reasons, though, too. That's why I think it's an okay answer, because, you know, the way Robert Kirkman kind of wrote the story out and, you know, kind of seeing it the art, you know, the comic art fashion as well with Charlie Adler and the amazing style that I thought he brought. He was really kind of the beginning of my comic kind of journey again, like just really reading in his stuff. I know he had Tony Moore kind of do the first six issues as well, but, you know, kind of seeing that style art, it was, you know, it was a gritty style. You know, it brought what it needed to bring. You know, it definitely fit for what The Walking Dead was doing in the comic form as well. And, you know, now The Walking Dead TV show for me was really my first show that I ever really got into, again, because I was a huge fan of the zombie genre. And, mm-hmm. you know, a quick fun fact, too, I remember being mad. I remember when my dad and my brother and myself, we were watching TV one day, and we saw the awesome trailer, the pilot trailer of the first episode of The Walking Dead coming out. And then it said, brought to you by AMC. And this, mind you, is when TV shows were not a big thing. So we were all mad that it was a TV show. And we're like, are you serious? We thought it was going to be a movie. You know, we're all mad about it. And then, obviously, you know, I'm glad it was a TV show at this point. You got, you know, 11 seasons out of it and so much more. And movie-wise as well, it's so hard to pick one. You know, I'm a big fan of Quentin Tarantino's films and how he kind of, you know, writes them and films them, you know, and the angles and the cameras and the camera angles that he kind of puts out there as well. Huge fan of Quentin Tarantino. If you put a gun to my head at that point, I'd say, you know, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood would probably be my favorite. And I know, you know, you got juggernauts like Pulp Fiction and you know, Kill Bill's another fun one for me. And you know, Inglourious Basterds is a fun one too. He has so much great stuff to me. But those would probably be my three. And I guess I'll stay on the zombie genre for 1 second. You know, one of my favorite zombie-ish, a classic one to me is Night of the Living Dead, the 68 version. It you know, has that nostalgia feel. It's a classic. It's one of the first ones, you know, in the Romero zombies ever made. He changed the whole kind of world at that point with, you know, the view, I guess, of the zombies. So it just holds that nostalgia kind of classic feel to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Makes sense. And I will say that one thing that I've always found interesting in this genre is that it does seem to be very tricky to portray zombies in a way that feels right. Mm-hmm. You know, for instance, one of my favorite books around this topic in general is World War Z.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic book, you know, spans the entire breadth of time from the beginnings of the outbreak to the end of the outbreak and all the stories in between. And then they made a film about it, and
right there is your perfect response. And I've always heard that as well, not to cut you off or anything, but I never read the book. I've only seen the movie. I've always heard that the book was, you know, did so much better. And just like you said, elaborated on so much more. It just felt way better than the what we got in movie fashion, you know.
The one of the biggest change, forgetting that the film focuses on one person basically throughout, you know, one story, which I suppose makes sense if you're making a film around the idea. It would be tricky to make a film that isn't 5 hours long, mm-hmm. if you were going to be adapting the book. But the most egregious thing that film did is they had the zombies run.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the books, it is not, you know, an overrunning of the zombies, like to of the human race, but it is the fact that these slow, shambling things just don't stop. that's the thing that grinds the humans down, is that these things will just keep going. And, you know, and obviously, you know, they were loved ones. So that's how they get close to you, because you can't bring yourself to do something about it. And that's why it takes so long to deal with it. And as you go through the bit, it really is very well done. And then obviously in World War Z, the movie, they're just really fast zombies.
It's just madness and chaos throughout, and you know, all that good stuff. No, I definitely get that too, and you know, I admire hearing that aspect of things as well. And that's kind of the, you know, again, speaking because I've never read the book of World War Z as well, but right. I've always thought that was missing in the cinema world, I guess, you know, I could speak of, you know, and that's one of the big reasons why we're here now with Avalon too, is just like allowing these characters to actually feel, you know, this person that is obviously now a zombie slash, you know, in their eyes, like a crazy sick person, you know, this was a person, this is a shell of an individual that you knew and loved. And now, you know, what's the mental weight, what's the mental toll that takes on somebody? And really that PTSD factor of things, you know, because people, there are PTSD doesn't need to be like a really, really, really crazy, crazy thing. It could just be, you know, something that just simply impacted an individual that, you know, might not impact another, you know, but that PTSD can stick with somebody forever, or just, you know, a small time as well. But it's really kind of gathering that mentality and bring that into this genre as well, and really articulating the way that could kind of affect somebody's day-to-day living, especially in a post-apocalyptic world. But I really admire that. I enjoy that a story actually does that, and if it does or not, I don't know if I just went on a, like a, you know, tangent there or in a different rabbit hole, but like that's really why Avalon is the way it is, because like I feel like that was missing in at least cinema kind of deals.
Yeah, and one thing that I was thinking a little bit about as well is that what is it that the story's kind of like, it was almost doing that thing where you're reading it and you go, this reminds me of something, but what is it? And just talking about talking about the World War Z film and like how, oh, there's elements that are missing and things like that, I think I've just figured it out, and it's a bit of a weird one, but imagine if you had added more humor into the comic. I feel like it would feel very much like Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, like, no, it's funny that you said it, because even with Shaun of the Dead, which is a great film, I love that film, it does such a good job throughout it. You know, it knows what it is. You know, it's grounded in so much reality. The characters feel so real in the sense, like the blue-collar kind of working, you know, character mentality, and just, you know, the lifestyle, you know, of where these characters are and how they treated everything seemed very realistic. And it was really obviously doing like a pun on how blind anybody could be to, you know, the real world just being kind of dead already, you know, and then obviously having the zombie apocalypse kind of foreshadowing the same exact thing. But I get what you're saying, though, too. And I think I would almost agree with that. And I actually really enjoy that kind of correlation as well.
Yeah, it's something that was like, I was thinking that, oh, you know, what if they tried to make it without the humor? I was like, I don't think it would work without the humor, but I do think that if they were to make a gritty version of it, it really would feel like Avalon and be the way it would go. Yeah, basically it would be like if Quentin Tarantino did Shaun of the Dead, which is kind of what you got.
So that's an awesome correlation, and I'm all for it. I love it. You know, and I would obviously love to be kind of bracketed with that. That'd be amazing. Not that, you know, I think I'm on any level of either one of those two, you know, Edgar Wright and then Quentin Tarantino as well. But, like, it would be, you know, I could see that as well, especially with the Shaun of the Dead factor. Because, again, but obviously it was made to be, you know, more of a comedy rather than what it was. But, yeah. But I get that, you know, because like I said, it has that gritty kind of feel to it. It has that realistic, raw feeling to it as well. The characters felt authentic and real and raw as well. It didn't seem fake, You know, it all seemed like it was just real life. And that's the, you know, kind of the best approach that I could say that with Avalon, we're just trying to make these characters feel real. Not everybody's the hero. You know, things that you kind of, you know, with World War Z, the movie, I guess, you know, Brad Pitt, you know, of course, not everybody's going to be Brad Pitt and, you know, you're not going to have the amazing looks, you know, the talents and the skills and just, the, you know, just getting through the whole story like Brad Pitt would. Or even, again, Rick Grimes, for that matter, you know, being a huge fan of the, you know, The Walking Dead, even, like, not everybody's going to be the Rick Grimes, you know, so... And I think they did it pretty good as well, but, like, I really wanted to, you know, differentiate Avalon from The Walking Dead as well and just really focus on the family as the center focus and have the depths spread out equally amongst all of them and not have one specific main character. This story's following the Castle family, and all these characters feel like they could be a main character to anybody that's reading it. You know what I mean? So it's just... There's no one specific focus. Every character, I want them to feel raw and authentic and, you know, like there's depth to every single one. It's not one is just kind of just thrown in there just because.
Yeah, that, and I would say that's definitely coming across like that. And, you know, at this point, you know, 5 issues in, we definitely know more about some of them than the others, but... Yeah, I'm sure as the time goes on, we'll actually start to really see, and again, without spoiling anything, why one or two of the characters have been acting the way they have so far.
Mm.
We still don't quite know what's going on with a couple of... Yeah, it'll be interesting. Looking forward to seeing more of that as time goes on. However, I do think we should get to sort of the biggest upcoming thing for you, which is that there is going to be a Kickstarter.
Yes.
So why don't you give a little bit of detail about what that's all about?
Yeah, of course. So our Kickstarter is going to be going live September 6th, this upcoming Friday, around 7 p.m. here Eastern Standard Time. We're going to be doing a live Kickstarter as well, like I mentioned, and we're going to be doing, you know, a goal of $1,282. So not a, you know, substantial goal. We've had a bigger goal in the past as well. You know, just a very doable goal to make sure we kind of get what we need to do so we can actually simply just get this comic, this issue out to the public as well. You know, it obviously starts with everybody else kind of supporting us, the likes, the shares, you know, the pledges for rewards and kind of all of that kind of gets us out there. You know, we wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for everybody who's helped us in the past and supported us in the past. But we have, you know, a lot of cool stuff here for the season finale of Avalon here, season one. We're going to be doing 2 or 3 different covers, 1 standard, 1 variant, and there's going to be another variant that's actually a gold version of the standard cover. So that's kind of a cool, unique thing that we have not done yet, and we're kind of making specific for the finale. We're going to be doing another artist. So up until this point, Demetrius has been doing all the art. Everything you see visually is all Demetrius. You know, we're going to be having a local artist do his interpretation on Miss Martin from issue 1 and 2, basically the first infected person that you've seen. He did his interpretation on her as well as a poster. We're going to be selling that as well. Demetrius will be doing a poster as well. And two of the big rewards that we're kind of marketing as well is one of them is going to be an offer for Demetrius to do a personalized zombie infected person. So if you want yourself to be infected, to look infected, or, you know, have Demetrius do the infected makeover, the surgery kind of on you as well in his style, he could do that. And then the second thing would be Andy and Miller's, we're going to be doing realistic, you know, replicas of their real badges. Unfortunately, this is going to be a little expensive because the badges are real and custom. It's going to be Avalon badges for Andy and Miller and a badge wallet with their, we're going to make identification police cards for both of them as well. So it's going to be like a merchandise memorabilia item as well for Andy and Miller, real badge wallet, real leather and, identification card that we make as well. So we got a lot going on for us this Kickstarter since, you know, kind of going out with a bang here with the season 1 finale. And obviously we're going to be doing stretch goals. That'll be kind of known and apparent when we kind of come out and go live with it as well.
All right. Oh, that's interesting. I can definitely see the badges. Yeah, that's not going to be cheap. I know those things like that are frustratingly still expensive to make, but I'll be intrigued to see what they look like.
Very interesting. So, they're very interesting. They're actually really cool. You know, I have saved photos of it as well. We're kind of putting together a cool kind of demonstration of what they would look like for everybody as well. And again, like, you know, it's just something to offer if, 'cause I would be interested in something like that. It's just, you know, as if somebody is and they want to help us kind of support the cause and kind of get us out there and make sure we hit that goal as well, so we can kind of get this comic out there to people as soon as possible as well, then that would be the fastest way of making it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll make sure to include the information for the Kickstarter in the show notes here. One thing I should ask, since we know when it's starting, how long is the campaign?
It'll be a 30-day campaign from the 6th of September here, so we'll be going to that first week of October as well. Really kind of just grinding out those 30 days there, and obviously it's important to kind of meet that goal on that 30-day spread as well. And once that is kind of, you know, hopefully funded in that 30 days as well, we've done, you know, a quick sidebar as well. We've done Kickstarters in the past. We've funded every single one of them. And again, due to everybody kind of being awesome and kind of getting us out there as well and funding them, we're going to be getting this out there as soon as possible as well. Demetrius is grinding through this issue here. He's, working on it every single day, halfway down through this thing. And as soon as it is done, and as soon as all the products are done as well, we're shipping these out ASAP.
All right. Yeah, I'll definitely be taking a look at that when that opens up on the 6th.
Awesome.
And why don't we finish up here by having you explain to everyone where they can find you online, where you would like them to go if they are interested in Avalon, and just anything else that either you may be working on aside from Avalon, or just anything else you want to bring up.
Yeah, so basically you can find Avalon anywhere. You can find us on any social media platform. If you find us in one spot, you're going to be able to find us in all spots. We have a link tree tagged onto all of our social media platforms. Just look up Avalon Comic, you know, basically anywhere, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, X, you know, and we have a website as well. It's probably easier to kind of roll through our website since it's simply just avaloncomic.com. And we have all of our social medias tagged to there as well. We do have a store. We do have an event section on our Avalon webpage as well. If you do want to buy our Kickstarter or our product as well, I would kind of stress at this point, you know, wait until the 6th when we launch the issue 6. We'll have all that stuff to offer there because, you know, obviously the goal is to meet the goal. And in having that support from everybody would be awesome. With September 6th coming up here as well, kind of making sure that we hit that goal to fund. So we'll have everything to offer. We'll have a PDF catch-up tier, physical catch-up tier as well. So if somebody's hearing this now and is interested in checking us out as well, we'll have all that stuff offered on our Kickstarter. But that would be our main focus right now and kind of generating everybody into that direction through the month of September. But that would basically be it.
Okay, and just in case someone isn't 100% sure if they want to put the money down for, say, the first issue or what have you, do you have anything where it's like maybe just the first 10 pages or something like that, some kind of preview that they can look at to see if it's for them?
Yeah, if you have Global Comics kind of an account, you can kind of go on there as well. We have our issue 1 on there, and issue 2, I believe, as well, is on there. If you have an account, I'm pretty sure if you have an account, it's pretty much the first issue is free of charge. So if you wanted to kind of get it, to kind of see what you're getting into here, we offer that as well. If you're kind of correspondent with Global Comics there as well. So, you know, other than that, you know, we do offer a cheap PDF per issue on our website as well, to, you know, for basically people to try it. You know, we're pretty much very, you know, we are very confident. If anybody is interested in this kind of genre or this kind of topic, just a fraction, we're pretty confident that you're going to be around and you're going to enjoy what you're reading, because, you know, we're all fans of this genre and itself, and we want to do it justice and, you know, bring all the glory to it as well. So we're trying to stay honest in this genre.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's like I said, going into your store, the PDFs are very reasonably priced.
Yeah,
for what they are. But, you know, like you said, maybe wait until Kickstarter's out, see if you want to check it out on there first.
Yep, we'll have a lot of information put on there as well, and kind of, you know, a nice, you know, a bunch of pages there from past issues and from the new issue coming out as well. So you can see a bunch of different new things and see if it's for you, you know, and it's the best way to do it.
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming on and talking with me about this. It's been a blast being able to get into it with you and going over everything that went into it. And obviously, I'd love to have you back on, and maybe we'll just discuss a zombie film of some kind, or like, yeah, do a deep dive into that if you'd want to come back on.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, that would be a blast. You know, it's honestly, you know, it's obviously a pleasure to be here today, and, you know, be on the show as well with you and meeting you. And I would love to come back if you would love to have me back and talk about zombie flicks and just movies in general. I'd always be glad to come back.
Fantastic. I will definitely hold you to that. All right. Well, you went over where people can find you, and if people are interested in talking with myself or looking into what we have, you can go to blokebusters.com, look at our other episodes. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter/X, whichever name you decide to use for that. I am not as active as I have been in the past, and that is because I am a parent now and have less ability to just sit on my phone. But you know, I do try and maintain a presence on there. So, you know, if there is anything you want to talk about, you know, feel free to reach out. I will happily talk with anyone about pretty much anything. So yeah, you know, reach out to us there. Just search Blokebusters, you'll find us. And with all of that being said, once more, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure having you on.
Same goes for you. You know, I really appreciate being here, you know, allowing me to be on their show here. And again, it was a great time. I'm glad to be here anytime.
And as I said, that is an ironclad binding contract. Everyone's heard it. So there we go.
So now it has to happen. Yep.
All right. And for everyone else, I'll see you next time. Bye.
In case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Hang on a minute, lads. I've got a great idea.
Louis, I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.